Welcome to the Bridge Podcast, a digital worship service. We know that walking with the Lord isn't easy, and we hope this show is a way to come alongside you and offer a little extra weekly encouragement. Most of the content for the show was originally created for our BridgeBox subscription service. For more information, go to missionusa.com/BridgeBox.
As I am without one plea, but thy blood was shed for me, and that thou bidst me come to thee, O Lamb of God, I come. I come. Just as I am, though tossed about with many a conflict, many a doubt, fightings and fears within, without, O Lamb of God, I come. I come. Just as I am, thou wilt receive. Welcome, pardon, cleanse, relief. Because thy promise I believe, O Lamb of God, I come. I come. I come.
To you, oh. Jesus sent his people out two by two. That's in Mark 6, 7 through 13. In a similar fashion, folks in Alcoholics Anonymous have their sponsors. Both of these are there for the same reason. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 10 says, two are better than one. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Just talking through our struggles can be a huge part of success in overcoming them. In our ministry here in Chicago, all of us regularly go out together and get a hamburger and rant and vent about life. It lightens the load. And when you succeed, there are people right there with you who know how hard it was to get there and thus know how to properly celebrate. And celebrating success is key. It's a necessary step to overcoming obstacles. As it turns out, nearly all obstacles are conquered through the careful working of steps. Number five, I don't need to work any steps. I've been told by more than one seminary graduate that they were instructed to never offer practical steps to help people overcome their problems. Seriously, I'm not making that up. The first time I heard this, I was massively confused and I asked, why on earth would they tell you that? The answer was, because if you give people steps to follow, they'll work the steps and fail to rely on God for change. Now, that advice actually sounds insightful, provided we don't really think about it. Because if we say, you know what, you're right, relying on God is the thing people need to do, then we quickly come to the question, okay, so practically speaking, how do I start relying on God? And then we need some steps to work. Specifically, we need steps, practical, actionable items with measurable outcomes that are about walking people through the process of relying on God for making changes in their lives. Let me give you an example. Say you're feeling overwhelmed in your life. Now, one option is to tell you, rely on God, stop being overwhelmed. But again, how does one do that? A second option would be to encourage you as a first step towards relying on God to go home and make a list of everything in your life that you feel concerned about, and then categorize that list into things you have control over and things you don't. The next step would be to think through changes you can implement on the stuff you have control over. And the third step would be to start committing the things you don't have control over to God in prayer and asking Him to help you relieve that worry within you and help you instead focus on making the changes that are up to you. When we want to make changes, we need good steps to guide that process. It turns out that there are smart steps, maybe even 12 of them, we can work, and they tend to lead to success. In fact, after more than two decades of working with addicts, I can tell you that those who work the steps are massively more likely to succeed in making changes. Number six, I probably don't need an experienced mentor or pastor to help me through this. The word pastor means to shepherd. As you know, a shepherd makes sure that his sheep have food and water and are protected from dangerous animals and thieves and stay close to the herd. He takes care of the sheep that are sick. He leads the herd to the best place for them to be. With that in mind, it's worth asking if you actually have a pastor, that is to say, a shepherd in your life. If the head of your church is too busy to know your name, hear your story, and honor your request to sit down with you, then professionally speaking, he isn't your pastor. He may be the guy in charge of the church you go to, and he may be a gifted public speaker, but he's not really your pastor. And if you're saved and looking to grow, you need someone further ahead of you in the faith to help shepherd you through the changes that are before you. Understand that this person can be a mentor, a Bible study leader, or even a Christian brother or sister acting as a sponsor for your 12-step program. They don't need to have a degree in ministry. They don't need to have the title of reverend. What they do need is to be a bit further along in their walk with the Lord than you, and to have love in their heart for you specifically. Even if the change you're working on is something small, say a bad habit you want to drop, you will still need that greater maturity and experience to rely on. In truth, when we have particularly bad habits or anything as extreme as addiction, our lives end up getting reorganized around feeding and enabling that addiction. This happens slowly, and most of the time we don't realize it's going on. It's important to recognize this because it may not seem like you need major surgery just to get rid of one thing in your life. But realize things almost never exist in isolation. In other words, you rarely have a bad habit just free-floating out on its own. As an example, alcoholics tend to date other alcoholics. They tend to have friends who are also alcoholics, and they tend to hang out where alcohol is served. See, before long, for that alcoholic, life has become organized around drinking alcohol. Now, in order to make this change, to leave drinking behind, they're going to need to make sweeping changes in their life. For instance, it's essentially impossible to maintain sobriety around a drunk girlfriend or drunk buddies. So that means that getting rid of alcohol also involves getting rid of most of their relationships, along with most of the places they used to go. And that's major surgery. Number 7, I'm doing the same thing that didn't work last time, but I'm sure this time will be different. The bad news is that trying yet again on the plan that failed you last time, but with a touch more willpower, is not going to work. And somewhere deep down, some part of you already expects that this is going to fail, and fail badly. What very few of us see is that our doomed to failure efforts at change are, in a strange way, an integral part of the bad habit or addiction. See, our habits and addictions exist as part of a cycle. The big dramatic declaration of quitting, and the tears, and the public announcement that we're free of this habit forever is part of that cycle. Let me put it to you this way. Say you smoke cigarettes. Some part of you knows this is not good for you, bodily, socially, or financially. But in addition to the very real addictive nature of nicotine, you like smoking cigarettes. We've all liked smoking cigarettes, including me. And there is a sinful part of each of us, what the Bible refers to as our flesh, that very much wants to keep on smoking cigarettes, regardless of the cost. Now, what your sinful nature knows, just like mine, is that it can't effectively convince you to completely ignore all the downsides of cigarettes, at least not forever. So every couple of years, your flesh will be totally in favor of an impassioned attempt at quitting, as long as it can't possibly work. The reason for this is that once you've tried and failed to change this habit, you can console yourself with the knowledge, hey, I tried to quit. No one can say otherwise. And that's true on some level. You did try to quit. So since it didn't work, it's probably okay to keep on smoking. And while we're consoling ourselves, I bet another cigarette would really hit the spot. See what I mean? Don't feel bad. We've all done that. In fact, most of us have done it many, many times. Attempts at change that are doomed to fail are easy to spot. When we're operating in our own wisdom, with our own willpower, according to vague and immeasurable plans, on our own, without any kind of mentoring, these are attempts at change that are not going to work. That's what we did last time and the time before that. Beloved, you've tried using the devil's 3 favorite tools in making changes: fear, shame, and guilt. but humility, which is the thing lacking in each of these seven bad ideas, will allow you to reduce your expectations to something reasonable. And when we have reasonable expectations, we begin to see a sense of success. That success may be small, it may be partial and inconsistent, but it's there and we can see it. That success is important because it gives us something to build on. When we take that humility and we add grace to it, now we have a potent combination. Because grace will tell you to stop playing games and wallowing in defeat. It will remind you that you're already getting somewhere, so you should stand up and get back in the fight. Courage will do the same. These are spiritual tools you use to fight a spiritual battle, one you fight with your eyes open. This week, start asking God for the humility to get wisdom, perspective, and accountability from folks who have walked these roads before. Ask Him for grace to get back up when you fumble and stumble. And ask Him for courage to keep going even when the path seems strange and unfamiliar. Armed with these, you will begin, perhaps for the first time, to see changes take place.